Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour Editorial Review. Now, the Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri, and the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week in more than 70 countries worldwide and on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour Editorial Review, please visit my webpage. It's georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the 2004 World Silver Survey. When we come back right after this message. You know, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our forefathers, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Well, you know, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts," into our Constitution at Article 1, Section 10. Then in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. Then, in place of just weights and balances, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, second, and fifth planks of the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. They gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills and clad coinage in place of silver coins. Now, in the intervening 70 years, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until now we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers are Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson. Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons that I teach in my Mosaic Law class. It's conducted twice a year here at the law school. And to learn more, just call and order my free general law CD package. Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, and entertaining. And best of all, it's free of charge. Why don't you call right now? The number's 417-273-4967. Remember, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study, so you don't have to come to the law school. We'll bring the school right into your living room. If you're online, you can go to the website, georgegordon.org, click on the email, send me an email request for the free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, last time we're talking about Franklin Sanders, The Money Changer. It's a financial newsletter. I recommend it highly to all of my students. The Money Changer is at Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Now, that's the address. But they've got a toll-free number. It's 888-218-9226. I'll give you that number again a time or two during the program. But if you've got a pen and paper, write it down. It's 888-218-9226. We're talking about the World Silver Survey. Now, in the chart, Silver Supply, I've arranged the categories to move upwards from the more solid to the less solid to hardly solid at all to utterly imaginary. Now, we can assume that the hard data on mine production and silver scrap fairly and accurately and broadly cover the market. So let's look at the chart. Take a look at the silver supply in millions of ounces, and you'll notice that the categories mine production and silver scrap change very slowly, and then not very greatly over time. However, the other three categories, the official sales, that's government sales, hedging, that's buying on paper, and implied disinvestment, that's people who hold silver and sell it, very wildly. Now, these are the least substantial figures that the GFMS presents. Now, the GFMS, remember, is called the Goldfields Mineral Services. Goldfields Mineral Services, published in Britain. You can get a copy of it, remember, from World Silver Survey, and it's called www.silverinstitute.org. Again, that's www.silverinstitute.org. Now, if you want to play this game and play it seriously, there's some big money to be made. Big money to be made without risk, without buying options, without buying positions, without buying paper. You buy it and you hold the physical asset, and then we'll wait for the market to bring gold and silver back into equilibrium. They'll come back into equilibrium at some point in time. I can't predict. I'm not a prophet. But we know that it comes back into equilibrium because of the sheer market forces involved. There's 17 times more silver in the Earth's crust than there is gold, and yet silver is priced 3.7 times lower than that gold-silver ratio. Tuck that one away now in your heart. Now, when we take a look at implied disinvestment, it is a pure BS figure. It's pure balance. It is pure speculation. It's called implied disinvestment. Now, the reasoning behind implied disinvestment appears to be this. Number one, the market this year fell short of supplying all of the silver used. Number two, therefore, the silver had to come from somewhere. Number three, investors out there in the world hold some of the silver in the world. And number four, therefore, those investors must have sold some of their silver. It's called disinvested. Well, maybe it works that way. Maybe it doesn't. After all, since all of the silver used in a year is not used in a single day, but gradually, maybe some of those people out there buying silver resort to buying paper silver. Maybe instead of buying physicals, they borrow silver. There's a market for borrowing, you know. Or maybe they use derivatives to lock in the price of the silver that they'll use later in the year. And maybe all this paper silver and silver borrowings that papers over the deficit year after year, whatever the shortfalling, whatever the filling silver comes from, that is the big mystery of the silver market. The silver market falls short of production by about 30 to 35% every year, but somehow or another it's filled. Now, either somebody's lying or fudging about the numbers, or somebody's selling a lot of the silver, their silver sets, etc., into the marketplace at these ridiculously low prices, which doesn't seem very likely. Or else there's a lot of lying going on. I kind of fall into the group that believes that there's a lot of lying going on. So whatever that shortfall filling silver or wherever it comes from, it's a big mystery, and as far as I know, including GFMS, that big board or the big seller who has filled a deficit averaging 13% of annual fabrication demand for 15 years is a mystery. And every year GFMS comes up with some stopgap explanation or another. And indeed, they may be right. Now, for the past couple of years, they've been advancing this theory. It's the Chinese government selling. But you know, that's awfully convenient since the Chinese government remains very tight-lipped about its silver holdings. And all this mystery lends believability to theories like those of Ted Butler. You see, Butler maintains that interests who want to keep silver low have built up a huge short silver position. Now, interesting, but who would want to keep the price of silver low? Well, the first suspect that pops to mind is the United States Federal Reserve System. If they have been suppressing gold's price for the past 10 years, they would also have to suppress silver's price at the same time. After all, silver rising against gold would raise the suspicions of too many traders. But conspiracy or not, the mystery remains. For 15 years, silver has suffered a shortfall of supply over demand without rising or raising the price. Sooner or later, the price will have to raise. Or rise, or the U.S. Congress will have to repeal the laws of supply and demand. Now let's take a look at silver scrap. Now remember, we have four areas we need to look at here. Silver supply, silver scrap, fabrication demand, and photography. All right, now we just looked at the silver supply. It runs 13% less than fabrication, 35% less than production. Now when we look at scrap silver, the global scrap supply actually rose last year 2.6% in 2003, with the largest increase coming from India, where scrap silver soared 40%. Now, that's not surprising since many Indians, especially farmers, own silver jewelry like a savings account. So it is fairly price sensitive in India. Now, a large, fast gain like we saw last year is always likely to draw a strong scrap response from India. And that's because last year, some areas had suffered 4 years of drought, so farmers had to sell some of their silver to raise money for food. Scrap supply, however, showed no great global increase, even with the strong price rise. The intra-year dollar price rise of 26% did not have a material impact on scrap levels. It is important not to overemphasize the importance of the price-scrap relationship. Remember, the historical correlation between price and scrap, the scrap supply, is less than 0.5%, and relatively large price movements do not have a major impact on scrap volumes, particularly in developed economies. Mine production grew 1.1%, while scrap production grew 2.6%, but even with both silver supply sources rising, the structural deficit this year still amounted to 72 million ounces. Here's the point of my story. Not enough silver is mined or reclaimed to meet fabrication demand. 72 million ounces had to be found somewhere. It had to come from somewhere else to fill the demand. The mystery is, where did it come from? Now, let's take a look at silver fabrication demand. The chart, silver fabrication demand, eliminates all of the most speculative or conjectural categories, like producer dehedging and implied net investment. Rather, it only shows silver used in making something. It's easy to see that three main uses, that is industrial, photography, and jewelry, along with silverware, consume roughly equal amounts of silver. What investors should never forget is that in most industrial uses, silver demand is very price inelastic. In other words, it doesn't move. That is, the silver used contributes very little to the end product's cost, and there's no good substitute for it. So manufacturers don't cut back silver usage over a broad range of prices. Put another way, you know, if we were building automobiles and the price of steel goes up, we could look around in our car and we could say that we want to build this car. And we could look around and say, well, tell you what, Let's substitute plastic here in the dashboard for the steel that we're putting in here. Let's substitute plastic in this place in place of steel. But when we talk about silver, there isn't any other substitute for silver. Now, it's true, if you want to make sinks, you don't have to use silver to make sinks. But then, I haven't heard of anybody making silver sinks. But when it comes to electrical wiring, electronics, when it comes to photography, or when it comes to making silverware, what are you going to make silverware out of? Plastic? All right, so let's use our head. You can see that the general trend has been for silver use to increase from 720 million ounces in 1990 to 880 million ounces in 2003. Fabrication demand increased all through the 1990s, but peaked in 2000 at 937 million ounces. Well, we got to take a break here, so why don't you hang on for a couple of seconds. We'll take our break and we'll be right back. Stand by. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Hey, here's an interesting statement. It says, then Peter and the other apostles answered and said, we ought to obey God rather than men. You'll find that in Acts 5, verse 29. You know, that's a pretty revolutionary concept, isn't it? We ought to obey God rather than the highway patrolman or rather than the government agents. But you know, it's impossible to put that concept into practice unless you know the law. Now, can you imagine yourself actually telling a policeman or a judge that the law of God supersedes the law of the state? You mean the law of God is superior to the law of the state? Well, listen to this. There are actually three laws that support Peter's position in Acts 5, verse 29. The First Amendment to our federal constitution is number one. Public law 97-280 is the second. And the United States Supreme Court decision in Seeger versus United States is the third. Now, do you know the scriptural law to cite in support of your position on, say, the census, public schools, social security, vaccinations, or the many other laws of scripture that conflict with the laws of the state? And do you know how to look them up, research them out, or code plead the law to use the scripture to defend yourself against state and federal incursion upon your constitutionally protected rights? Well, if you don't know the law of scripture and you don't know the law of the state, then you're in no position to challenge either one, are you? Now, if you're tired of being a biblical illiterate with the police and public officials kicking sand in your face, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? Remember, that's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, entertaining. It's free. And you can call right now and order yours. It's 417-273-4967. Now, my Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, please go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the fabrication demand. How much silver do we need for fabrication? Making things, you know, like electronic components. Well, you can see that the general trend has been for silver and silver use to increase from 720 million ounces in 1990 to 880 million ounces in 2003. So fabrication demand increased all through the 1990s, but it peaked in 2000 at 937 million ounces. Now, that brings up the problem with silver as opposed to gold. You see, most silver demand is industrial rather than monetary demand. So let me pause here for a moment. Let's cover this monetary demand. Back when I was a youngster, in the 1960s, 50s, 40s, the biggest single use for silver in America was for money. We made our quarters, dimes, and half dollars, and silver dollars out of silver. And when the price of silver was 90 cents an ounce, artificially suppressed, government could make a dollar's worth of silver for 90 cents and make 10 cents. And then on top of that, they shorted the dollar by 10%. You know, it's 10% copper and 90% silver. So they made another little profit. So it was profitable for government to make silver money and put it into circulation. Then in about the mid-1960s, with inflation rampant and the Vietnam War starting to heat up, we Americans found out that guns and butter didn't go well together. And the price of silver escalated from 90 cents an ounce to $1, $1.20, $1.30, $1.50, and the government in 1965 had to stop using silver in our silver coinage. Well, now, all of a sudden, when we started using clad coinage, all of the silver coin in circulation disappeared. Bad money drives out good. And the world now had a surplus of silver because the biggest single usage for silver in coinage was now used. I mean, it was used up. It was done. We didn't need it anymore. Now we had more silver to put into electronic components and other things, and that stabilized the price of silver until the 1970s. Then the Hunts got into the game toward the end of the 70s and thought, gee, silver is getting scarce again because industrial demand has sucked up all of that monetary demand. Inflation has driven the price up even higher, and so they started buying silver. Silver finally peaked at $50 an ounce or $54, and then has been dropping ever since. It bottomed out around $4 an ounce, and now it's back up to $6.34. But now, there is such a shortfall of silver that there is an explosion in the price of silver, which is just on the horizon. All right. When economic activity drops, industrial silver use drops also. Now, that appears plainly in the roughly 57 million ounce drop since the 2000 peak. However, as I pointed out a little earlier, when monetary mismanagement and inflation kicks in, then monetary demand ramps up to take over from industrial demand. See, what will happen here is this. You've got all these paper dollars. And when it finally dawns on you that your money is inflating at 7% a year, you will start buying more silver, more gold, more goods to get rid of those dollars that are depreciating. You're not dumb. You know that next year your dollars are going to buy 7 cents less than they're buying this year. Now, what if we ran into hyperinflation and the inflation rate runs 20% a year? Then watch out, boys and girls, because just like it was back in 79 when inflation hit 20% a year, actually inflation hit 13%, I believe, and interest rates hit 20%. Well, you people are going to come unhinged. You will rush out and you'll start buying silver and gold and you will unload all of your dollars. All right. Well, when you do that, then prices are going to skyrocket because there isn't any silver out there to fill that demand. Now, the truth of the matter is, in order to suppress the price of silver, they've been selling all of this paper silver. Now, watch what's happened. Over the last 10 years, in order to suppress the price of silver, every time the price of silver tends to go up, the banks and the monetary institutions come out and they offer you silver certificates for less money, which encourages you to take the silver certificates, rely upon the banks and financial institutions who have the silver or are promising to deliver the silver at a future date. These are called silver commodity markets. You do the same thing when you buy sow bellies and wheat. You're buying wheat on the futures market. You're buying sow bellies on the futures market. Today, oil hit $44 a barrel for September delivery, buying future deliveries of oil. Somebody promised they'd pay $44 a barrel for oil in September. Now, what if you can't deliver that oil in September? Boy, watch the price of oil skyrocket if there's a shortfall. Watch the price of anything skyrocket when you're unable to meet delivery dates. Now, that's where we're headed with silver because they've oversold silver by 30 years production out of the mines. They've oversold gold by 15 years production out of the mines. Now, the people that are holding the physical gold and silver don't have a problem in the world. You've got physical control. Even if the price goes down, you don't get hurt, because you got the physical property. But if you're buying futures and the price goes down, then it's Hurtsville. If you've got physical possession, nobody's going to screw you out of your position or your property. But boy, a lot of people aren't going to get paid. I mean, that's just where reality's at. So I want to emphasize again, if you want to play in this game, if you want to play in this sandbox, you got to have physical possession of the property. Now, my critical presupposition in recommending silver is that monetary demand will benefit silver as much and more than gold. And I think, if you'll think about it for a moment, when the price of gold doubles from $400 to $800 an ounce, did you think that silver was going to go down in price, remain the same, or go up in price? Well, think about it. Silver is undervalued now by nearly 4 to 1. When the price of gold goes up, the price of silver will not only go up, it will go up exponentially. It's a whole lot more logical that silver is going to go from $6 to $12 than it is that gold is going to go from $4 to $800. When gold goes from $4 to $800, gold will go from $6 to $20 or $30. When gold goes from $800 to $1,600, you'll see silver go from $30 to $60 or $90. Silver is never going to be worth as much as gold. I'm not making that claim, but the ratio has to be 17 to 1. That's what the market demands. That's what God built into the planet. That's the way this machine runs. Now, it's true the Federal Reserve can sell people silver certificates promising delivery, and they can sell silver and gold futures, and they can sell debentures and paper. That's true. But then at some point in time, when those people want to get physical delivery of their product, they're going to be disappointed and the price skyrockets. And that's just history. That's just the way life works. So in fairness, I want to warn you that if that presupposition proves wrong, so will all of my assertions about silver. But I don't think I'm wrong. I believe that as the U.S. dollar depreciates, silver will benefit much more from monetary demand than gold will, because it's a much smaller market. Furthermore, silver is called poor man's gold. You see, an Indian farmer over in India, he could eke out $6.34 to buy an ounce of silver. $400 to buy an ounce of gold is a tougher move. I mean, just look at it this way. I don't have any 100-ounce bars of gold, but I got a few 100-ounce bars of silver. You see, a little guy like me can afford to buy silver, but I can't afford to buy big denominations in gold. Well, Joe Sixpacks all over the world are going to be in the same boat, and Joe Sixpacks all over the world are going to buy silver rather than gold, and that's why silver will benefit more than gold. When the price of gold hit $800 an ounce, if you'll remember back in 1980, the price of silver hit $54 an ounce. It came back further than 17 to 1. It dropped down to about 15 to 1. And then it went back the other way. It went from 15 to 1 to 20 to 30 and so on. Now, the trick here is, when the silver ratio gets down to 17 to 1, then you sell the silver and trade it into gold. That's where you make the profit. Instead of converting your paper money to gold today, you convert the paper money to silver, hold the silver until the swing comes to 17 to 1, then you sell the silver and convert it back to gold. And you should come out about four times ahead, three times ahead, twice as much, or something on that order. In other words, that's what we're speculating in. And if it doesn't, then so what? If it doesn't, I paid 100 cents on the dollar, bought my silver, and I've got my silver in my bag. I haven't lost a dime. To give you an illustration, back in the 80s, I have silver that I paid $15 an ounce, $10 an ounce, $5 an ounce, and I think I've got some at $4 an ounce. I don't know if it was under 4, but down around $4 an ounce. But hey, listen, the silver that I bought for $15, I've still got it. And the silver that I bought for $10, I've still got it. The silver I bought for $5, I've still got it. When the price goes back, which it always does, it'll go back to 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 40, or 50, then I'll get my profit. Now, if you have to sell, you're in a bad position. If you're going to buy into silver and then you have to turn around and sell it later on, you haven't gained anything. In fact, you'll probably end up the loser. You've got to be able to buy, stick it in a hole in the ground, and save it for the long haul. And that's the way the game is played. That's the way this sandbox works. Hang on, we'll be back with more on silver right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Tonight's report is on the World Silver Survey. We'll be back with that in just a second. Stand by. Hey, how many laws did Moses give us in the Mosaic Law anyway, and how many laws has the state given us in our secular government? Well, Moses gave us 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments. That's less than the 2,000 traffic codes you have in your state traffic statutes. And the state, at last count, has given us 2.5 million laws. Yeah, that's right, 2.5 million laws against 759. Now, Peter said that we ought to obey God rather than men in Acts 5, verse 29, and Congress said that we ought to voluntarily apply the teachings of the Scripture in the lives of families, individuals, and societies. I said that in Public Law 97-280. And then our Supreme Court said that there's a higher loyalty than loyalty to this country, and that's loyalty to God. And they said that in Seeger versus United States. Now, every authority is in agreement. The Congress, the Supreme Court, and God Almighty all agree that the Scriptures are the final authority on law. Now, to learn these 759 statutes, judgments, and commandments and how to use them against government intrusion into your God-given rights is a right, duty, and obligation that we owe to ourselves, to our families, and to our society. Now, here at the law school, we teach all 759 of these statutes, judgments, and commandments along with the penalties for their violation. And we do that school twice a year here in the spring and fall. Now, why don't you make it a point to regain your First Amendment right to free exercise this year? The First Amendment is the gateway to the Second Amendment and indeed to your entire Bill of Rights. And the law of God is old, but it's not old-fashioned, and it's very relevant to our lives and very relevant to our rights today. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package first? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. And remember, my Mosaic Law School is also available in compact disc for adult home study. Hey, if you're online, go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at and analyzing the World Silver Survey. That's done by an outfit over in Britain. Let me give you their name and number here. It's called, I can get them on the webpage. It's www.silverinstitute.org. It's $195 for the report. If you want to play this game, then you should know everything that you can about it. And the best place to keep abreast of silver and gold and the ratios between the two is the Money Changer. That's Franklin Sanders here at the Money Changer. And why don't you call him and tell him that you want one issue so that you can see whether or not it's worth the money. The number to call, 888-218-9226. Now, there's a lot of names and numbers here for you, but that's 888-218-9226 for the Money Changer, Franklin Sanders. And then if you want this, Sanders recommends this World Silver Survey. Now, that's only if you're an investor. I mean, you know, if you're just Joe Sixpack driving a truck, you don't need this. But if you want to play this game in this sandbox, I think there's some big bucks to be made here. It's called the World Silver Survey at the silverinstitute.org. All right, now here's some more of the story. Now look at the chart. Silver supply in millions of ounces. Now we took a look at the silver supply. Then we took a look at silver scrap. Then we just went through the silver fabrication demand. Now we're up to photography. Photography is a big use of silver. Now, in any event, if I'm wrong, the cause is not going to be from digital replacing silver in photography. This is the old red herring that analysts new to the silver trade always land on. And like 15-year-old kids, breathlessly discovering that boys and girls are different. It's also the story that silver bears, and anyone who wants to suppress silver's price trot out occasionally to drive silver prices down. They say, oh my God, digital is going to replace silver use in photography, therefore silver is going to sink into a bottomless hole. So let's take a look at this beast square in the face in his red and watery eye and see whether he can gobble up silver in us too. Let's look at the chart. Photographic silver use from 1990 through 2003. Silver demand ranged from 221 million ounces to 196 million ounces. And during the recession years of the early 1990s, photographic silver use dropped. Why did it drop? Well, because when times are hard, people take fewer pictures, just like they take fewer vacations. So the decline that we've seen in the past few years probably reflects hard economic times more than digital eating into silver. Now, digital photography will only slowly take market share away from silver halide technology, and not quickly enough to materially affect silver's prospect during this bull market. You see, we're on the verge of an economic collapse. I'm not sure that this collapse isn't going to occur before the election. George Bush has to keep the economy held together, at least until after the election. Now, I'm not hoping for an economic collapse. You know, the longer this thing stretches out, then the more time you've got to prepare for it. Because when this thing turns turtle, it's going to be a James Dandy Wallapalooza. And if you've got debt, that debt's going to swallow you whole. And if you've got paper assets, stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, Federal Reserve notes, bank accounts, they're going to eat you alive. We're expecting an inflation rate of 5,000% per year. That's called hyperinflation. It set in Brazil in 5 days, not 5 months, not 5 years, not 5 weeks, 5 days. Now, if you've been paying attention to America's balance of payments deficits and our federal budget deficits and the debt structure of America, our economy is two-thirds consumer. Two-thirds of the entire economy is user-driven. We're not a nation of producers. We're a nation of consumers, couch potatoes that sit on the couch and eat potato chips and drink soda pop. We don't get out and go to work and produce stuff. And as a result of that, we've been sending out paper IOUs promising people that make our tennis shoes, big screen TVs, and automobiles that we'll pay them someday. I don't know what we intend to pay them with. It's certainly not with gold or silver or other goods or services. About the only thing that America produces in abundance is debt and paper money. Debt and paper money is about all we produce here. Now, you want to read that again so that the next time you read one of these naive, silly stories about digital photography replacing silver, you'll know to pitch it into the trash can right away. But don't take my word for it. Listen to GFMS. The global decline, they say, the global decline in photographic silver use was chiefly due to two main developments. First, fears over terrorism, SARS, and many countries have a sluggish economic growth, and they've had negative consequences for international tourism, which fed through to reduced opportunities for camera use. People are taking fewer pictures. Secondly, there were further inroads from digital technology, principally in the developed world. Indeed, growth in conventional photography in parts of the developing world helped minimize the overall impact of digital technology. A further point for consideration is that the fall in photographic demand for fresh bullion would have been less than the decline in fabrication. This is because there was a notable fall in photographic scrap in many countries, the flip side of a smaller silver halide cycle. In other words, using less photographic silver also means recovering less photographic silver scrap. Now, there are new uses in silver. And while silver usage may be eroding in photography, new uses of silver are being discovered every day. And it's possible that silver may be used as a non-platinum catalyst in fuel cells. Silver keeps on replacing gold in electronic uses, and then there is the high-temperature superconductor wires for use in power generation and distribution grids. The superb efficiency of these wires promises to absorb millions of ounces of silver. And then finally, there is silver's use as a biocide or antibacterial agent. Overusing traditional antibiotics has created super strains of resistant bacteria. Silver biocides, on the other hand, operate mechanically to kill microorganisms so they can no more develop resistance to silver than a roach can develop resistance to a brickbat. Silver also enhances burn healing and may be able to replace arsenic and other chemicals in wood preservatives and marine anti-fouling coatings. And then last, there's the silver sinkhole. In the beginning, I said that it won't be the fundamentals that will carry silver to $80 an ounce, but monetary demand. Still, the fundamentals need to favor silver as much as possible. So do the fundamentals favor silver? And the answer is you bet they do. Over the past 15 years, the Silver Survey has shown a silver deficit digging a deeper hole year after year. Just take a look at the charts. The silver sinkhole, and by now the cumulative structural deficit, that is fabrication demand, less mine production and scrap supply, amounts to 1,522 million ounces a year. That's 1,522 million ounces. However, much supply overhang the 1980 silver spikes high prices might have brought out, the hungry years of the 1990s and beyond have now been fully consumed. Now, somebody has to pay the piper, and he can only be paid with higher silver prices. Now, don't be deceived by higher silver prices that don't have commensurate purchasing power. The mere fact that silver is going to be worth more dollars in the years to come doesn't help you any. Inflation is a hidden tax. So when inflation eats up 7% of your income and you get a 7% pay raise next year, all you've done is break even. You have to get a 7% pay raise next year. In fact, you need a 7% pay raise right now, because the 7%, remember, is compounded. So it's going to be 7% plus 7% of 7% that you're losing. So you got to have the raise in advance, or you got to have a 10, 12% increase. Now, there's going to be a big market move at some time in the future. I don't know if it's 1 year, 2 years, 5 years. I've been expecting it for a good long time, and I'm one of these silver bulls, as they're called in the trade. And I just sit here patiently, watching, waiting, like a shark circling his prey. I'm a shark. So I'm a net user, or a net holder of silver. And when I want to spend money and I want to buy something, I don't spend silver to buy it. I don't sell silver. I haven't for many years. I sell gold. I sell cows. I sell wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. I sell sheep. I sell labor, not silver. Silver I hold on to. Because when the move comes, when that move, whether it's triggered by the collapse of the stock market or the collapse of the dollar or by the shortage of silver in the marketplace, I don't know what's going to happen or when it's going to happen. I'm not a prophet. But when it happens, I'll be ready to take advantage of that move. And that's why I'm advocating that my listeners pay attention and subscribe to the Money Changer. Now, hang on. We'll take one more break. All right, you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. Tonight's special report is on the World Silver Survey. We'll be back with that in just a second. Now, let me ask you this. What do you think's wrong with the Ten Commandments? You know, it's pretty obvious that something is dead wrong with the Ten Commandments, because they've been banned from our public schools, public institutions, and our national consciousness. Now, instead of these 10 simple, time-tested laws, we see the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto taking their place. And now they teach the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto in our public schools, public institutions. We've made them a part of our national psyche. Now, this is a radical change in our political and moral outlook over the past 50 years, don't you think? And are you aware that your daughter couldn't receive an aspirin in your public school without your consent, but your daughter can have an abortion arranged through that same public school nurse without even your knowledge, much less your consent? And that's why I contend that the solution to this moral perversion and national insanity is to go back to what worked. Let's go back to the Ten Commandments and the Mosaic Law. You know, our founding fathers practiced and advocated the Ten Commandments, and they even put 22 principles of that law into our federal constitution. Now, that's not separation of church and state, boys and girls. And there's still one school left in America that still teaches this entire Mosaic Law, the Ten Commandments and all 749 statutes, judgments, and commandments, as well as the penalties and the 33 articulable benefits that you receive for their observance. You know, every law has a penalty, and you don't have to know what it is to suffer its effect. So whether you call that the Mosaic Law, the Law of God, common law, natural law, karma, or something else, it's automatic. It works just like AIDS, herpes, and VD, which just happens to be the natural penalty for adultery, cause and effect. Now, for more information, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package? That's a four-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, informative, entertaining. It's best of all, it's free of charge. Remember, that's free. Call now. The number 417-273-4967. If you're online, go to the website, georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about the World Silver Survey. Has to do also with the world silver supply, but this book is called The World Silver Survey. It's a survey of the use of silver in the world and how much of it is available and how much is in stock and storage and how much of it is being recycled every year. Now, the place to start here is with the Money Changer. The Money Changer is a newsletter, comes out monthly, published by Franklin Sanders. And this guy is probably the number one authority on silver in the United States. If there's anybody else that monitors or watches silver prices and ratios with gold more than this guy, I don't know who he is. Now, I've known Sanders for many, many years. He's an honest guy. You can depend on this guy. And I don't recommend very many people. And I recommend a few of my students, but I don't recommend very many, because most people are liars and thieves, and most people steal from him. This guy doesn't. My brokers that I recommend don't. But you got to have caveat emptor. You know, the buyer's got to be aware. So why don't you call and ask Franklin, just tell him old George sent you, and tell him, send me a sample copy. I think when you see a sample copy of Money Changer, you'll be convinced. Now, I don't get paid anything for selling this for Franklin. But this guy's newsletter, this one and the Privateer, are two that I recommend. You know, remember this guy Buckley down in Australia? This guy Buckley's got his head screwed on in the right direction. And this guy Sanders has got it screwed on in the right direction also. And that's why I recommend these two newsletters. There's lots of newsletters out there that are good. You know, Weiss is good. Cook is good. McElvaney's good. I don't have anything to complain about the conservative newsletter writers. But I recommend these two right at the top of the page. And that's because these guys are telling you like it is. And this is where the bear does it. Now, Sanders' number, toll-free, 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. This is the July 2004 edition. This is the one I think you ought to ask for. Just ask the guy, see if he'll send you the July 2004 Money Changer as a sample. And read the article, and I can only report on one of these a month or so. There's other things we have to talk about. But about every month, I'll pull a story or something out of the Money Changer, and I'll report it to you. I do the same thing with the Privateer. And these guys stay right on top of the markets, and especially this ratio of silver and gold. This is an opportunity, I think, to make some money. I'm in this one. I'm a silver bull, and I'm invested in silver. And I'm sitting back here on the sidelines like a shark circling above his prey, waiting for the economy to collapse. Now, if the economy never collapses, and I grow to be an old man of 96, I will not lose a dime in my speculative efforts. I'm already in possession of whatever I bought. I lost the bank. Now, if you're buying paper, well, you need to sit back and reevaluate your position. If this economy turns turtle, and I want to point one more thing out to you here. The federal budget deficit is $500 billion a year, and your balance of payments are $500 billion a year. That's $1 trillion, boys and girls, and all of the money in the world to borrow. I mean, if you took every dollar from North Korea, South Korea, China, Japan, Germany, Europe, South America, every dollar that's put in the bank in the year 2004, for savings, there's only $800 billion, only 80% of just those two debts alone. And those have to be financed from outside the country. We don't have $1 trillion here. Now, we're to the point where this thing is going to turn turtle. I don't know when. I'm just telling you. Pay attention now to what's going on. You know, let your common sense run its course. Now, there's some things you need to know and some things you need to do. And if you're invested in paper, you got to think about getting out. Get out of paper and get into something that's got some real value, whether it's wheat, corn, beans, honey, or oil. Now, just to show that I'm not making all this up, here's what the GFMS says about how they figure Chinese silver stocks from page 34 of the World Silver Survey. And I added the emphasis as it fits. They said, quote, to clarify, it is necessary to provide a little bit of background as to how GFMS puts together its data series. Each component of our supply-demand balance is independently estimated, as are the trade flows into and out of any country. In the case of China, we derive estimates for mine production, scrap, and recovery from imported silver contained in, amongst other base metals and concentrates, total supply. The sum of these components is then compared against total demand derived from estimates of each major component of offtake, and net trade flows are added to or subtracted from this in order to arrive at an implied stock average figure for the country as a whole. Unquote. In other words, when we talk about China and their silver production and their silver consumption, it's just total guesswork. I think we'd be better off if they just told us the truth and said, we don't have a clue. We don't have a clue. But we do know this, boys and girls, there's a silver shortfall every year. We might not know who's filling it or where it's coming from. But we're not producing enough. And those are what we call the fundamentals, and those fundamentals work for silver. Now you take the international geopolitical economic crisis that the world is sitting on top of right now. And I'm not just talking about the United States, because the United States represents 20% of the entire world economy. When this economy collapses, let me assure you, every economy in the world is going upside down. And this is going to take us into the Great Tribulation. Now, that's my next speculative move. Not my prophecy, because I'm not a prophet, but my speculation tells me I don't think you can take 20% of the world's economy out and then the other 80% go on as if nothing of any importance has occurred. I wish it were like that, but I'm afraid that it's going to impact upon me just like everybody else. And I need to be prepared for it just like you do. And you know, in the Bible, it talks about a guy by the name of Joseph preparing a 7-year food supply for a famine that was coming up. You know, my common sense tells me that maybe we ought to be prepared for the next 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 years, don't you think? Now, just in case you think along those lines, I teach two classes. One is how to make $100,000 a year on 25 acres or less, and the other is called subsistence and survival. The third one I teach is a business class. And I predicate all three of these schools upon the scripture and the laws of the Bible. Just like Joseph was depending upon God to direct him through the famine in Egypt, I'm looking to the scripture to direct us through the Great Tribulation and the economic collapse. And what I see in the scripture makes all the sense in the world. And what George Bush and John Kerry are advocating, I think, is a fairy tale. Fairy tale. Alice in Wonderland. BS, if you want to put it in plain terms. Now, clearly, any miscalculation of any of these components will have an influence on the residual or implied stock change figure. For example, if our mine production were too low, then the implied stock run down in recent years would be too high, and conversely, the implied stock buildup in the 1980s and much of the 1990s would have been too low. Now, this year, only 30% of newly mined silver came from primary silver mines. The other 70% came from lead, zinc, copper, gold, and other byproduct mining. 70% of silver production in the world, boys and girls, is a byproduct of mining some other copper, zinc, or gold or something else. Only 30% is primary. And you got a 30-year deficit. I mean, if you take all of this silver over the next 30 years, that's what it's going to take to satisfy the demand. That's just what's already been sold, already what people are holding in their portfolios. That doesn't sound like good economic practice to me. But don't let me get in the way of your happiness and success. If you want to buy more stocks and bonds and get in on the tech wreck, you know, get after it. Don't let me get in the way. But if you're interested in following the scriptures, doing property instead of from each according to his ability and to each according to his need, and practicing communism, you want to practice property and property rights, I think that the silver-gold imbalance is that golden opportunity. And after all, I didn't create this market imbalance. Don't blame me. Little Georgie didn't do it. But there's this big market imbalance, boys and girls, and that big market imbalance is going to come back into balance with a flare. And when it does, I want to be there to take advantage of it. And I think you ought to be there, too. So why don't you write for Franklin Sanders Money Exchanger, Money Changer, it's called, The Money Changer. The phone number, again, 888-218-9226. I subscribe to it. In fact, I just sent him a new subscription form today. I said, hey, keep sending me the paper. And I think that you'll be very satisfied with it. I think it's going to make you 3.71 times the amount that you spend on it. See if I'm not right. All right, we're just about out of time here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School in Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. And the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school, the Gordon Law School, is a private, non-profit, non-commercial, non-sectarian law school. The school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. And the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. There's the time. Says it's up. I've got to leave it right there. I'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.